It's the Underpowered Hour. On this week's show, Everotti makes an electric Land Rover. Blackbridge puts a Camaro engine in a Defender. Ike's got workshop updates. I work on my trailer. And we've got another famous Land Rover owner of the week. And now, here's the show. Welcome to the Underpowered Hour. I'm Steve Barris, mild-mannered television executive by day and Land Rover collector by night. You can find out more about our cars and what we're working on at thebarriscollection.com or follow us on Instagram at thebarriscollection. I'm joined, as always, by my good friend, Ike Goss.
Thank you to everyone joining us today. I own and operate Pangolin 4x4 in Springfield, Oregon, where we live and breathe Land Rovers. Check us out online on Facebook, Instagram, at Pangolin 4x4. Let's get started.
All right, Ike. Well, in the news this week, some exciting news from one of your favorite Land Rover customizers and sparkling water companies, Everotti. Everotti, which I thought at first was like Everready, like the battery company, you know, with that cat.
No.
Is the cat being electrocuted on the Everready battery? You know how like its logo is like a little cat, right? Is the cat made of electricity, or is the cat being electrocuted?
That's a question I hadn't previously considered.
Right?
I thought the cat was Rayovac. Is it Everready?
Oh, you're right. Maybe it's Rayovac.
I think it's Rayovac.
Is it Rayovac? Well, maybe regardless,
We got to write them and see.
Yeah, we're going to look into it. We'll have the research team look into that because, I mean, it's kind of a different tone for your, you know, your mascot.
Are you making your battery purchase decisions based on a logo of an electrocuted cat?
I just want to know, like, are they saying like it's like this battery is strong enough to electrocute a cat? Or like our electro cat is, you know, certifies this battery? I don't know.
We'll find out. We'll get back to you.
These questions are
more listeners want to know
on next week's show. But Everotti
yes.
has, you know, makers of fine electrified things, has whipped up a very fine electrified series Land Rover, it appears, according to an article that we find in Inside EVs. I believe it's a review website for the interiors of electric vehicles. Inside EVs. Yeah.
Who knew?
Different photos of EV interiors, you know, sort of where the switches are.
This article does have photos of the interior of this EV.
Yes.
And this particular vehicle is marketed at the Polo Cred. It's called the Polo Edition.
The Polo Edition.
Polo Edition,
and is that for people that is that for people who engage in polo or simply wear the polo? Oh no, there are photos here at a polo club. Actually, I think this is the Palm Springs Polo Club. This is where they have Coachella, I think.
We've been to this place.
Yeah, that's right. This is where the 4x4 was.
It was there. I think this is where the acrobats were stationed.
Yeah, that's right. This has all the hallmarks I know already of a Land Rover that you really enjoy. There's wood in the bed.
It checks a lot of boxes. Checks a lot of boxes. You got the teak floor.
Yeah,
it's important.
Teak floor.
You got to have the teak floor to cover up those dings and dents from previous years of ownership. Less expensive than fixing them properly. And has the bonus of appearing luxurious.
Yes, it is appears luxurious. The seats are way over quilted. Like they're quilted three times more than the standard Land Rover seats.
Those are made by Charmin, those seats. Quilted.
They triple quilted, yeah. They really have
triple quilted those seats,
pleated like crazy.
This is very beige, the very, very beige car,
super beige,
so beige. They say the exterior is limestone, which is a traditional Land Rover color. Yes. The interior, however, is reupholstered in the finest beige.
It's
orthopedic fabric.
Yeah, it feels like if you were unable to stand up in the shower and you needed something to sit on, it would be upholstered in this fabric. I think that's sort of the vibe that they've got.
It's got the interior design by old folks home vibe going on.
It appears as though the hood is made of the same material as the seats as well. It definitely feels like the top
is
a vinyl kind of almost.
It does.
I'm not sure.
It does. Yeah. It has those kind of twist and turn fasteners.
Yeah.
For the sides and the windshield.
And they're all pooked around the windshield, which is a sure sign of ill fit. And it's
switchy dash.
It's got a lot of switches. It's got it's missing the wiper rack cover, I noticed. What would traditionally cover up the windshield washers and exposed wiper mechanization.
Mechanization, yeah, it is. It is missing that. It has an Exmoor style seat bar that runs a seatbelt bar behind the seats. So it's got some modern things. I'm not exactly sure what is to the right and left of the rear passenger seats. There's like some kind of a box sort of situation there. It looks sort of in
there's a box situation in the back. Yeah. I don't know what that is. It looks like some sort of drink holder slash console in the rear compartment zone.
Yeah. Interesting.
We need to get some more information on this, but it also has the typical stainless fasteners, Chinese LED lights, you know, sort of the normal Land Rover restoration package from the UK.
You got to have all that. Everything is Allen keyed in there. There's not a correct fastener on the car, so that's good.
A lot of Allen screws, a little bit of lumpy dash paint, some sagging fenders, you know, sort of typical British restoration work. They claim this vehicle is future-proof. By converting it to electric, they future-proof this vehicle. I think there's nothing that says future-proof like some electronics.
Yeah, just a ton of electronics.
Because we all know that electronics stand the test of time.
It's perfect. It is a perfect car. Yeah, they've done a great job. So there you go. Everati, if you'd like a car that, you know, is well-acquainted and over-quilted, you have subtle design cues of a bathroom seat, then you're in luck. Pretty good looking, halfway's restored car. And of course, it has the commensurate redundant bottle opener on.
Oh, it does. Good eye. It's got the bottle opener on the back. For those of you that don't know, the entire dash of a Land Rover,
that's exactly right,
is a bottle opener. Five feet wide bottle opener. Speaking of Land Rover conversions, I understand that you found a Camaro Land Rover hybrid.
That's right. Yeah. So Blackbird Motors, as we know, I mean, LS conversions are all but standard practice now. In fact, it's hard to find a restored Land Rover Defender that doesn't have an LS motor in it. It's getting more and more difficult these days to find one that somebody hasn't put an LS motor in. But this company, Blackbird Motors, is doing the Camaro ZL1, you know, which is a rarity. You know, you don't get that very often. I'm not sure that it adds any benefits at all. I'm actually not that familiar, but you can, if you want, get the Camaro package in there. You know what, though? I think, as we were talking before the show, we've both agreed, we're going to start doing Camaro Defender engine swaps so that, you know, there's now all of these Corvettes and Camaros without engines in them that really need a Rover V8 or a 2.5 diesel put into them. I think there could be a big market.
I think you're right. I think nothing says performance like a Camaro with a 3.5 liter naturally aspirated Rover V8.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, hey, it worked for the Rover car, man. I mean, you know, people love those things.
What do they have? Like 90 horsepower? Would you say 90 horsepower?
But on a good day, maybe. Yeah. I think from the factory, maybe they were 115. That might have been like crank horsepower. I don't think that was like
optimistic.
I don't think that was like at the wheels, you know. I think like by the time you got through the transmission and everything, you were maybe 90 85 90 at best. But you know, I don't know, maybe in the lighter weight Corvette body, you know, that's all fiberglass, got a lower profile, lighter car, maybe it would be, you know, maybe it's the perfect combination.
What would you call this company?
That's a great question. You know, what would you call it? Probably highly unsuccessful, but
Commenders.
I like it. Commander. Commander. You know, maybe it's possible it could become very popular amongst, you know, like Saudi.
That's a good slogan. That's a good slogan. Yeah. Pat yourself on the back with a commander.
With a commander. And we could take all the switch gear from inside the Defender and put it into the Corvette. So get rid of all of the Corvette interior and instead put like little Defender flippy switches and stuff. And
that's a good idea. There's so many leftover standard Defender dashes because people will replace them with a Puma dash.
That's right. Exactly. Put that standard Defender dash into the Corvette. Ooh, I'm just saying. There's a gentleman on YouTube that I watch who has taken a Dodge Viper, the classic first-gen Dodge Viper, and has essentially put what is basically the running gear of a Jeep Wrangler underneath it and created the, I'm sure, the world's only off-road Dodge Viper. And it is pretty sweet. He's done a really good job. He's really engineered a, and it's solid axles, and it is, it's pretty cool.
There's a company, and we should probably talk about them, or maybe we've already talked about them on the show. I think that we might have talked about them on the show. Legacy Land Rovers or something like that. Mm-hmm. Not to be confused with Legacy Power Wagons, which has been around for a long time. Legacy Land Rovers or Legacy Off-Road or Legacy 4x4. I can't remember exactly what they're called, but they're producing a Land Rover Defender body on a Jeep JK chassis.
Oh, right. That's what they're offering. Yes.
And we may have talked about one of them on the show one time. I think they use the Canadian built Aqualu aluminum Defender body tubs.
Right. Yeah, is what they use.
And they put that onto a Jeep JK chassis with a Jeep JK running gear and
running gear,
whatever. Probably some sort of LS engine swap.
Got an LS in there for sure. Yeah.
Gotta have that.
And so I'll throw a Rover V8 in there. There's so many left over. You know,
there's they're piling up. They're stacking up those Rover V8s.
They're piling up, yeah. We should talk to those guys. We should reach out. That's an interesting... Now, is that all new parts? Like, is it a new chassis and running gear?
I'm not sure. You'd have to ask them, but it's definitely JK stuff.
And, yeah, JK stuff.
You know, if their website is to be believed, it looks like mostly new componentry.
Right,
you know, they use the probably Dynatrack axles.
Yeah, sure. Makes sense.
It's like a box build. Or, you know, you buy all the parts and then you bolt them all together.
So it's like a home built Defender JK. No,
well, that's what they make, and you can buy it completely from them. I think is the way that they would like to sell it to you. It's kind of, the proportions are a little funky because the wheelbase is not the same, and so the wheel arches are a little, you know, different than what you might expect. But it's a thing that exists, and if you like Jeep Land Rover hybrids, Jeep Land Rover Camaro hybrids, that is, check it out.
And who doesn't, right? And who amongst us doesn't like a Jeep Land Rover Camaro hybrid?
They're probably great because the construction is like a lot more like a Jeep. You know, those body tubs are like one piece from the firewall all the way to the back. It's like one piece, like a Jeep or a Land Cruiser style construction.
Yeah.
And I think they do use Land Rover doors, maybe.
Oh, the actual doors. They're just like, we're not going to remake these doors. Because the one thing that Land Rover got perfect was the doors.
I will say that the galvanized doors are a lot better.
Galvanized doors are good. Yeah,
but yes, in the history of vehicle manufacturers, Land Rover doors are maybe not the greatest.
Maybe not top 10, but yeah, the galvanized, I mean, the newer doors, like the, you know, off a 2016 Defender, the doors are great. They finally figured it out and then they stopped making them. So
the doors on a Series 1, especially the late Series 1s, so the early Series 1s, the 80-inch doors, those kind of crack and they're pretty flimsy. Those doors kind of suck. But the middle Series 1 doors from like the 86 to the 109, that range of Series 1 doors, they last forever. They're worth nothing because all the ones that they made still exist. They
still
don't
exist,
rust because the frame is galvanized and the skin is like small enough that they don't really get dented either.
They're
pretty rigid, so those doors last forever.
They close nicely. They have enough heft to them that they close nice, as opposed to the 80-inch doors that just kind of bounce off themselves because they're too light.
They're too light. Those 80-inch doors are too light. So that era of door, they were like, hey, you know, we made this door with a galvanized frame and aluminum skin, lasts forever. Let's get rid of that.
Let's
never do that again. So then they made like 50 years of crappy doors that were very, very rust prone. Mm-hmm. And then I think they got sued.
They lost a
corrosion lawsuit.
Yeah.
And they were they were kind of forced to make it. Mid 2000s. And then they were like, well, let's, you know, those doors that we made that last a while, I guess we have to do that again. So
we'll go back to those for like 8 years and then never make another car like that again.
Yep. Yeah, it's a history of Land Rover doors in a nutshell.
I want to say 2009, again, yet another reason that 2009 is the best Defender. I think that's when they started going, that's when they had to start putting in those doors. Just came in like mid-2008, that lawsuit settled, and they started putting in those doors, and then you were guaranteed to get them in 2009 model year forward to 2016. So they made them, like for 7 years, and that was it. So...
Those are nice doors.
But all
nice
the replacement doors. Parts for those doors that you buy now are all those galvanized doors. It's maybe. depending on how new old stock they are. It's Russian door roulette. If you're
Russian gonna... door roulette, will this corner be the one that I go around and fall out of the car?
You never know. You never know. Well, speaking of falling out of the car, going around the corner, you've got a whole whack of cars up there at the old Pangolin 4x4 shop and horse ranch. What's happening? What's happening up there?
We got a lot of projects going on. We got a lot of projects.
Look at this Pangolin 4x4 jacket that you're wearing. The Pangolin 4x4 merch.
We're gonna have to send you one of those.
Ooh,
Pangolin,
I like
4x4. Look at this. We had
It says Ike.
It's personalized. It's personalized. Oh, we had to do that. We had like three employees that couldn't remember their names, so right. we had to get the embroidery.
Yeah, that's right. Between the four of you, yeah, I can never remember. Linus can never remember what anybody's name is. It's like, is that guy's name Jason? I can't remember.
It was Linus. He couldn't remember. Did you get
a little one for Peanut? Does he have a little tiny?
That's a good idea. We should get a tiny jacket for Peanut. I don't know where to get it. If anyone knows where we can get a tiny, tiny work coat for a 4-pound dog.
Yeah, for a 4-pound dog.
yeah, reach out. We'll get one for Peanut. But yes, we have a number of things going on in the shop. We have several projects. The coach built Land Rover, which is a real saga. We've been working on that for some time. That one, we're doing the mechanical work on that now. So engine's rebuilt, doing the transmission right now. It's a 51. So transmission's all apart. We're cleaning the transmission, getting all the cases really clean and all the bearings set up. So
photos of that up on the Instagram, I believe.
Yeah. I think we'll be putting together the transmission this week. And the chassis is at the acid dippers. So it's getting it's bathing in an acid bath right now. It's getting all clean, all the inside 75 years of dirt and debris is being cleaned away.
Is that the same stuff that Christopher Lloyd would dip the cartoons into in the dip. Roger Rabbit? That's the dip. It's the same stuff.
The dip. Same stuff. They scream a little bit when you put them in.
The chassis, yeah, just a little bit, yeah. And Christopher Lloyd does each one himself.
He does each one personally. Mm. Now, that Land Rover we're working on the color scheme for that. Mm-hmm. And the color, picking the color for that car has been a little bit of a saga. I've learned a lot about period colors.
Right.
So apparently there was an organization called the British Color Council. Color Council.
Well, those guys sound like a lot of fun.
Don't they sound like a lot of fun? So
tells me they might not have been the most colorful people. I don't know. I don't know why.
They produced a number of colors. I think 381 colors to be exact that were approved by the British Color Council during the 30s and 40s.
Uh-huh.
And these colors were approved for use on a number of ministerial and government projects. Mm, so the color of the phone booths, the color of the buses, the color of this, the color of the post office colors, like all that kind of stuff was sort of standardized. You know, the British were big on standardizing things, right?
They love standards. Oh, man.
They love standards as long as it was their standards.
As long as it was their standards, yes. No one else's standards, but theirs. They love them.
No one else's standards, but their standards.
Yeah, yeah.
So we sent away for an original book of these colors.
Oh, cool.
That were approved by the British Color Council. So for those of you that are familiar, there's like books of colors that like Pantone is a very popular.
Yeah, a sort of modern group standard.
Modern standard. These are colors, Pantone colors that people use for all kinds of things from art to industry. So this is the 30s, 40s, and 50s equivalent in Britain of that. So we sent away for one of these books and we've been poring over it to try and select a color that is not only in keeping with the vehicle, but something that would be used on a custom vehicle of that time. So that's been kind of an interesting rabbit hole to go down. We're also casting all the tire retention hardware for it in bronze. So that car, that coach built car, is getting like the shrouded tire cover.
Oh, right,
on the hood,
of course.
Like a Tickford wagon would get.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that's a really cool thing that it's getting. And then the hardware for that, it's got a large single four wing nut. It's actually a bolt that goes on top, and so you can grasp it with your hands. A big chunky, like it looks like an industrial faucet handle or something.
I've seen it. Yeah, it's got the little balls, little four balls, and it does. It that's right. It looks really like a faucet handle.
It's pretty cool. It's about 3 or 4 inches in diameter.
Little kind of crown.
So we found one of those that we can't have, but we can make a copy of it. So we're gonna take that to the foundry, make a pattern, cast it. So we're going to have a bronze one of those for the car. Made all the roof bracketry. So the roof is obviously constructed from wood, and it's got a number of brackets inside that the wood attaches to. And so we finished all of the welding and metal finishing on those brackets, and those are all going to go out to get nickel plated.
Nice.
So,
wow.
So it's a pretty involved project. It's like three steps beyond your normal Land Rover restoration. There's a lot of like restoration elements that will, yep, you know, are in common to a lot of the other work that we do, but it's definitely the next step and pretty cool. I'm learning a lot about how these cars are built, you know, back in the day. It's fun.
And does this get the green, light green treatment that the Tickford wagon would get, or is this a totally different color scheme?
It's going to be a different color scheme. Oh, this cool. is not okay. a Tickford, so it's not getting a Tickford color scheme.
Doesn't get
you know, it's going to have some of the elements of other coach built cars, but it's definitely not
it's
a Tickford.
Its own thing. Oh, cool. So wow, that's awesome. Thing.
Yeah.
Can't wait. Can't wait. I'm super excited about that one.
Oof. I am too. So then we got another kind of after hours like project that I've been working on a little bit. This is a car that came to us in the back of a pickup truck. It was just pieces. Mm-hmm. Somebody showed up at the shop. They needed a few things for their Land Rover project, and they had stopped somewhere else, and they had gotten the vast majority of a very rare early Series 2A station wagon, yellow station wagon.
Yeah.
And man, I was feeling really sad for this car because it's such a rare example. There's almost none of these early Series 2 station wagons. And it was like there was no chassis, there was no firewall, but all the body panels were there. So it was like the tub, the, you know, the doors, the sills, the dash, the floors, seat box, you know, fenders, all the radiator support, you know, all that stuff was there. And so I asked the guy, I was like, what are you going to do with all that? And he's like, well, I'm going to take a couple parts out of it and then probably just sell the rest of it. And I was like, well, tell you what, I'll give you those parts plus the stuff that you came here to get in exchange for these panels. So he was like, sounds great. I don't have to haul them home. So he dumped them off in the shop parking lot and drove away, and then
just opened the tailgate and sped off.
Opened the tailgate and sped off. And so that's been about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, something like that. And over the course of the last 5 years, we've just been kind of accumulating various bits that might make this a car again. You know, it'd be extremely expensive to buy all of the components individually to make this car again because it was missing so much. But over the course of the last few years, you know, in the same vein of the Rover powered Camaro, we've kind of accumulated a lot of leftovers from various projects and you know, stuff people didn't want. So we ended up with a rolling chassis from some folks over there in Idaho that they were doing a project. Really nice rolling chassis and decent used drivetrain. And it all just eventually, over the course of several years, kind of accumulated inexpensively. And so now we're filling in the blanks. So, you know, new wiring and, you know, some of the components that you have to have new door seals and rubber components and that sort of thing. That's all being, you know, the blanks are being filled with those new parts, but the body is kind of going on to the chassis now and it's running. So it runs, and I think it'll be all the brake pipes and hydraulics are all plumbed up. So it should be driving this week, I think. So it's so that's kind of cool that this thing is being revived out of leftovers. It's one of those leftover Rovers. It's not like a special car or even that particularly interesting. It does have like the fact that it is a yellow Series 2 station wagon or was originally is pretty unique. So there's, you know, less than five of those things. There's just so few of them. They don't exist. And that's pretty cool that it's going to exist again. It's going to drive again. So that's cool.
And you do have a soft spot for yellow Series Land Rovers.
I think they have a soft spot for me. They just keep showing up.
And they do. They find you. They know that you're a safe place.
So I have made no special effort at any time in my life to ever buy a yellow Land Rover. And yet they keep showing up.
You've owned more yellow Land Rovers than anyone else I've ever met.
Probably anyone else ever.
Ever. Yeah, I think that's cool. Even in like the AA back in the UK, I think you've owned more yellow
accurate. It's probably accurate.
It's a lot. Well, that's great, man. I'm looking forward to getting up there. It's not that many weeks now until the big Anarch show, and we're gonna have a ton of fun. have a ton of fun up there and check out.
Speaking of Anarch, what's that all about?
Well, man, it's coming up here at the end of May, and I'm told by our good friends at Anarch, Bob Steele and the rest of the committee, and of course John Kosich and the gang, have just done a big Anarch year deep dive. So if you liked our quick overview with Bob Steele, you will love John's deep dive with the organizers of each of the three events this year, both the West, Middle, and East Anarch events, and they go through everything in huge detail. And I would absolutely suggest that if you don't already listen to the Center Steer podcast, you should, because it's a great show. It's all the Dixon content you could ever want. They go through in detail and talk about the events that are going to be happening, where to camp, how to stay, all that sort of stuff, where to get your tickets, all that sort of business. So certainly
ancient
do that.
Ancient
rituals, what kind of goats to bring, ceremonial robes that will be needed,
secret handshakes.
That's right. The kind of incantations that you'll be expected to know, all that sort of stuff. And certainly you'll want to make sure that, you know, you don't show up with the wrong kind of blood sacrifice, because that's always embarrassing, you know. So, but for this upcoming at the end of May here, the West Coast Anarch event happening up there in Redmond, Oregon, you got to get a hotel now if you want to get one, because it looks like those are filling up, but plenty of camping space. It's happening at the same place as Overland Expo happens, I guess, Bend, kind of the Bend area there. We've been up there, and it's great. It's awesome. We did Overland Expo up there, and it was super fun.
It's going to be trail runs. There's going to be classes. Yep. You know, you're going to learn a lot if that's what you like to do. There's going to be some vehicles to see. There's going to be vendors to sell you things. There's going to be a lot of camaraderie. It's going to be all kinds of stuff. It's going to be great.
Absolutely. John Kosich and I are already working on a very, very special vehicle situation. Let's just say that. Hard to say that, you know, that it's going to be like a parade or anything, because it may not move, but it will certainly be an installation. Maybe it'll be a moving installation. Maybe not. We'll see.
It's going to be a bunch of shitty Freelanders, isn't it?
It's going to be a bunch of shitty Freelanders. It's going to be so great. So many Freelanders. It's going to be so awesome. Damn, I just can't wait. It's gonna be awesome.
Oh goodness.
Oh my god. Well, speaking of shitty Freelanders, it's been a week or two down here at the old Bears Collection Shop of getting our little tiny camp trailer ready. We've been swapping over the electrical system. You know, we got this little Vorsheer trailer, which is a company in Utah, American made aluminum, you know, two-wheel camp trailer, off-road camp trailer. They have a nice articulated hitch and stuff, but they're really inexpensive, really well done, but very simple. You know, they're not like a $50,000 rolling hotel. You know, they're a pretty simple barrel style trailer. You get a fold out tent on the top and an awning that folds out, that kind of stuff, some storage boxes, roll out kitchen kind of thing. Pretty simple. But the electrical system is also very simple, and we wanted something that was a little more robust so that we could have a little more electronics out there. We could power our Starlink. We could do some of that sort of stuff, have a little bit more reliable fridge and some of those things, as we go out a little bit longer than maybe this thing was designed for originally. So we've put in the kick ass, an Australian company, because you know what? Australians are pretty good at this camp trailer thing, because it's impossible to be outside in Australia, and yet those guys are outside constantly. They make good
you know
stuff.
What? One thing
they make good stuff.
I've seen a lot of Australian-built camp trailers. One thing that I don't quite understand is the headroom.
Right.
You know, you see those Australian travel trailers like drive by on the road, and some of them are quite large, you know, maybe not large by American standards, but they're large. But they're also quite short.
Yeah.
And I think some of them do expand, but some of them don't expand.
Right.
And it seems like a lot of them have like 5 feet of headroom. I don't really quite understand
it. I don't know either. Yeah. Anyways, so we've been rewiring. We put in lithium battery, a big giant 200 amp hour lithium battery. We've put in some new power distribution, a big inverter, big AC inverter, and some of that sort of stuff. So we're much better prepared now. We've got a whole bunch of solar that we can run into it. We've got 260 watt panels that we can put out into the sunshine and keep our batteries all topped up and all that business. So yeah, so we've been working away, and we've been shooting all that for the old YouTube channel, so those will come out in future episodes, and
looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah, it's going to be good. And the rest of the 3D printing stuff is up now, so head out and enjoy that. We just recently compared the super expensive $10,000 printer to our new Bamboo Labs $1,500 printer. And some of the...
What was the result?
Well, you know, the $1,500 Bamboo Labs printer is pretty good for most people. I think that, you know, technology has come an awfully long way since 2019 when the $10,000 printer was new. It's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing what you can get for $1,500.
It's like the Stone Age in terms of electronics, isn't it?
It totally is. Yeah. So we're going to go ahead and LS swap the $10,000 3D printer and see if we can't get a little bit better performance out of it.
Then take that out and put a Tesla motor in it. And then
put a Tesla motor in it. Yeah, it's going to be great. It's going to be incredible. It's going to be incredible. Well, before we go, we do have everyone's second favorite segment. And this is like for, well, like what now every other week here we were having one. This has been retired for such a long time. And now all of a sudden has punched its way back into the zeitgeist. So
had a lot of listeners request for the segment.
That's true. That is true. And this is, of course, the famous Land Rover owner of the week. This week, none other than world superstar, amazing individual, muscular, attractive, and always just a tiny bit oily, Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Do you need some time alone to examine this segment? Just a moment.
Little known fact, Dwayne The Rock Johnson actually played for the Calgary Stampeders, the football team. He hated it because it's very cold up there. But yeah, that's my hometown. He played for the Stampeders back in the day. So
Did you ever see him play for the Stampeders? I guess I did.
I didn't really take note of it though, because he didn't play that much.
Not a football player.
He does not speak fondly of that time. Anyways, so he, I guess he's got some Land Rovers is what I hear.
I understand that's correct. Yeah, he's got some Land Rovers. I saw an article recently where he had a custom made LS powered.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Built. Yeah, I know they're everywhere. Of course. Yeah, that's hard to get one of those without an LS in it. Yeah, but then I was thinking back to his filmography and I was like, you know, there's a lot of Dwayne Johnson Land Rover content in his films, you know, and I think at least one of these we've talked about, The Rundown. I think we about The Rundown in an early episode of the show. It's kind of a fun film. It's sort of guys hired to find this kid in South America, I want to say.
Yeah, I think that's
and
right.
And he's
yeah.
kind of a spoiled brat type character. Yep. And hijinks ensue. It's sort of a, I'd say it's a buddy comedy.
It's a buddy comedy. Yeah, that's right.
It has quite a few series Land Rovers in that film. And then, you know, fast forward a few years, Fast and the Furious, I believe Dwayne Johnson drives a classic 110. Fast and the Furious 17 or I think it's 8.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's 8.
It's hard to say. I mean, I don't believe that anyone says they've seen all the Fast and the Furious movies. I don't think you can possibly say that. You can't know that. There's no way to know that for sure. It's hard
to know when one stops and the next one begins.
Yeah, it's impossible to say you've seen them all. I just don't think you can.
Have you?
I don't know. No one knows. I have no idea.
They are broadly similar. The only one that anyone can say with any surety that they have seen is Tokyo Drift.
That's exactly right. Yes, that's exactly right.
And then I noticed that Mr. Johnson also drove a classic 110 all sort of safaried out to the premiere of his film Jumanji.
Well, that makes
sense. So there's a common denominator here. Obviously, this guy likes Land Rovers, right?
He likes Land Rovers. I think he must. Yeah, he must. He must.
It's either that or he's contractually obligated to do it.
To drive old Land Rovers. Yeah, you know, I mean, maybe he's got a little Momoa sort of thing going on there. Maybe he needs a Series 1. I don't know that he would fit in a Series 1, actually. Although Momoa does. I don't know if he fits in it comfortably.
They got a lot of headroom when they don't have a top on him.
That's right. As long as you don't have a top on it, then it's not so bad. It's just that you can't get the seat back. So, like, I worry that, like, do his knees fit under the steering wheel, I guess.
Maybe. I feel like those dudes are all torso. They got, short legs.
They're 100% torso. Yeah,
it's true.
Short little legs. Yeah. Yeah, they're like a T-Rex. Yeah.
You know, much like the Fast and the Furious films, I'm not sure anyone has ever seen Dwayne Johnson's legs. Do they even exist?
That's right. We don't know. He may just be like a vapor down there, like the genie.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't know. That's a good point. You're right.
Yeah, you know what his torso looks like, but you've never seen his legs.
Yeah, you're right. Actually, now that you mention it, that's a good point.
What's that word for collective misremembrance?
Yeah, There's a word for that. I don't remember like what the it is. The genie film that Sinbad was in, but wasn't, right? Like everybody thinks it was, but it doesn't exist. Nobody's actually seen Dwayne Johnson's legs. We just think we have. Good point. Well, at that, I don't know what else we can add. So, hey, head on over to the Anarch website and reserve your tickets. Get them before they sell out. Get your camping situation all figured out. We'd love to see you there. We're going to be there. Everybody's going to be there. Man alive. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. Bob Steele's going to be there. Yeah. Hopefully Bob Steele will bring his cowboy hat. Maybe we'll bring ours. I don't know. And
I think he's going to make a cowboy hat on site. That's one of the classes.
He's going to make one there. Oh, excellent. Yeah. That's going to be one of the booths. Bob Steele's going to make you a cowboy hat. I can't wait.
It's right next to the dunk tank.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great. I can't wait. So do that. Head on over to the Underpowered Hour store. Get yourself stocked up on t-shirts and stickers and things for the Anarch event so that you can be there in Underpowered Hour style. And if you can head on over to the YouTube channel and just like all of our videos, you know, turn them on for your cat, your dog, your grandmother, whatever. When you're out of the house, just let them play. That really helps the analytics. We appreciate that. We're trying to hit that magic 1,000 subscriber number because then we get that sweet, sweet YouTube whatever. I don't actually know. We don't know. We have no idea what happens when we get there, but we'll see. We'll let you know.
We'll get a decal.
Oh, that's gonna be fantastic. Yeah, put it in the back window of one of the cars. It's gonna be great. We get a tiny YouTube t-shirt for Peanut. It's gonna be great. just put it on the dog. Yeah, with that, hopefully everybody signed up for those Anarch events. Go do that for sure, and we'll hopefully see you all up there. And in the meantime, Mike, I will see you next week. Good luck on all those fantastic cars, and give that horse a couple of carrots for us, and see you next week.
I'll do it. See you soon.
The Underpowered Hour is produced by Liza Barris, Ike Goss, and me, Steve Barris. Pavel Svartov composed and performed our theme music. Consider supporting the show on Patreon, and if you already do, thank you. Your support makes the show possible. For even more, check out our Instagram or Facebook.